standing in the rain with his head hung low. Couldn't get a ticket, it was a sold out show. Heard the roar of the crowd, he could picture the scene.
We are halfway home on a Tuesday. Ben and Woods, 97.3, The Fan. And great to be here with you. Looks like a beautiful day. I wanted to, you know, I said yesterday, I wasn't super excited. Let me introduce the show. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor. Wanted to get some Eclipse talk going. Because I went, as I mentioned, in my QC Kinetic spot. I had to drag my ass to Choose Fitness. I have not been going to the gym. I've been doing little things here and there, but I have not been going to the gym. I've just been tired. Just like, blah. And so I dragged my ass there, and I could see some people standing out front, looking up. They had the glasses and whatnot, and I just kind of walked past them, went in, got my workout in. And as I walked out, you know, that was that spooky
dimmer. Dimmer than usual. I was doing my dog walk, and I didn't have the glasses, so I didn't look up. But I could tell it was definitely not the right light level for 11 a.m.
The right hue.
I went to Target after work, and when I walked in, I didn't really notice anything. But walking out 20 minutes later, I'm like, whoa.
Apocalyptic.
It's like creepy.
So when I walked out of the gym, the one of the girls that works there goes, hey, do you want to look up? And she had the glasses for all the patrons. I go, oh, that's pretty cool. So I put them on, looked up, and went, oh, all right, very cool. And I gave them back, and I walked back to my car, and I went home. Now, I walked in my room. Had a couple hours to kill before I had to pick up Bo from school. And my room was nice and dark. It was like, it was dark. Everything was a little bit darker. And I said, ooh, this makes for a good environment for a nap. And so that was my experience. And then when I picked Bo up from school, he got in the car and he had his Eclipse glasses on and was telling me all about it, how cool it was. So it was pretty cool. My parents were in the path of totality and said it was amazing. Said it was just incredible.
I saw some of the coverage starting like in Mazatlan, Mexico. And
yeah, they had parties
north.
And stuff. Yeah.
People were so, I mean, almost, okay, I get it. It's unusual. It's rare. But they were treating it as almost like a religious moment. Like, this brings the unity that brings us. It was basically, you know, shout out to his family. I hope there's peace,
and, peace and unity
that the eclipse brings to everybody in the path of totality. I thought it was a little bit over the top at times. The videos from, like, the stadiums in the path, like in Cleveland.
It was awesome.
That was really, really cool to see. To me, though, here in San Diego, it actually brought back bad memories because it felt like when we had all the wildfires and everything was like dim.
That's how
because of
it,
the smoke and everything.
Yep.
It's like, ooh, I remember this. And it was not a good feeling when we had those wildfires for like 4 days. The light level was a little like orange and dim the whole time.
Feels creepy.
It felt creepy like that for at least, you know, only like 30 minutes, but definitely noticed a difference.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. And then it was over and, you know, you go around your regularly scheduled day of waiting for Padres baseball to start at 6:40. But Paulie, showed us this morning on his phone.
Oh my God.
I'm trying to erase
that from my memory.
Bro, this is a nightmare. Paulie said they had a lizard, in their house last night. And I go, oh, okay. Well, we love lizards. My kids love lizards.
It's like a Gila monster.
Animals. What did you say?
It's like a big dragon?
I think it's a Gila monster.
Gila monster?
It's fine.
Gila monster.
He owes us those. When he gets a chance to get us, he can get us.
Like when we drive to Fantasy Camp, you go through Gilibet and Gilibet.
Look at it. He's so excited. Listen, turnabout is fair play.
Sorry.
Turnabout is fair play.
Dude. Well, animals, I don't know if it had anything to do with the eclipse, but they're Their behavior is weird, notably right? weird. Like, they're off on their rhythms because of an eclipse. They think they start shutting down, and then it gets light again. And they, yeah, that's a real, absolutely thing that animal behaviorists have studied during eclipses. The light level just messes with them way more than it messes with humans, because we can kind of understand what's going on, but they don't. And they start going into night mode, and then they go back into day mode, yeah. and it's like, really weird. So.
Well, dude, this thing like creeped into the house somehow. I don't know if a dog brought it in. I don't know how it got there, but I'm cooking dinner last night in the kitchen. I walk over to the sink, and the way our like counter, it goes fridge, sink, fridge, dishwasher, sink, oven, kind of all along the wall. And this MF-er was like creeping in from like behind the fridge, and he was just walking towards me. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to the sink, and he's right under there. And I'm like, ready to vomit, because I don't know what it is, man. Like, animals like that, little creatures, little critters that aren't supposed to be in your home.
I was ready to, like, come on, Polly. It's just a lizard.
Yeah,
we have
too.
Millions of them around. And then he showed me the picture, and I go,
it's like a cat.
Okay,
it's
this
the size
one,
of a cat.
This,
like,
was this was a terrifying
like
14, lizard.
14, 16 inches long. It was huge. And the fact that he was just just marching right towards me with no regard whatsoever. And I'm like,
no.
And I'm like, what do I do? I don't want to, like, I don't want to kill it.
If I had a shotgun, though, that's what I would just. I mean, it was. Do you have a picture you can post?
I could probably put it up here at some point.
Yeah, post it in the
it
chat.
Ended up hiding behind the stove, behind the oven, which I was using. So I had to, like, pull the oven out of its little, you know, cubby in the cupboard or into the countertop, pulled it out, and he was just creeped up in the corner there, and I had to, like, shove a broom and just kind of
he's rolled up,
sweep
dude,
him
like
out.
Looks like a rattler, man.
Yeah.
I would have lost it. I mean, everyone remembers my rat story. I had a rat in my house, and I was ready to burn my house to the ground. Burn it. I went into the bathroom at one point to see if I could locate it, and it had maneuvered up into my towels that were hanging, and then he jumped off of the towels when I ran. You've never heard a woman scream like as loud as I screamed that day, and I had to have a buddy come over and help me get it out of there. We have lizards around our house, and they're cool. My kids love to, like, look at them and chase them and stuff. Outside, and they're
outside.
All around their school. If a little one got in the house, no big deal. We got three cats. That thing's not going to make it 10 minutes. But this thing was not a little lizard. It was a big, big lizard. I think it might have gotten out of someone's home and their cage.
I thought it looked like a rattlesnake
it
that grew feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's gone? Creepy. You got it out?
Got it out. We used, we have like a little dog gate to keep dogs out of the kitchen or something, and had to just kind of
scoop it,
move it around.
We kind of like made it a little walkway from the kitchen out the like door, and I just kind of swept it in that direction, and he crawled on outside, and then I just shut the door and was like, I had to recover. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I'm not great with lizards and snakes and rats and really any spider, anything.
In the house, like, just, it's not okay.
It's not okay.
If I'm on a walk, from out walking outside, and I see some lizards. I mean, you see a rattlesnake, that's still, like, that's not okay. But, dude, something about them being in your house when they're not supposed to be is just not good.
Mm-mm.
Lenny in our YouTube chat says, the eclipse got people horny and other behaviors came out. Weird day in OB for sure.
I'm sorry, what?
I don't think that the eclipse is known to cause those kind of behaviors. Maybe the eclipse caused the Padres to come from behind 8-0. Like, weird
I'm
eclipse behaviors
in the,
yesterday.
In the Obesians being extra horny because it was the eclipse. That is something I would like to discuss further. Is that a real phenomenon? When I went out after the gym and looked at that little sliver, it didn't make me any hornier than I usually am at about 11:30.
Apparently in OB, things were going down yesterday during the eclipse.
That's wild.
According to Lenny.
Could have just been because it was a Monday.
Yeah, just a Monday, you know, long weekend.
No, I mean, you know, it looks like twilight, so you're thinking, all right, it's time for a cocktail and relax.
Yeah, it's like 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, but
you still know.
But it looks like it's later in the day, maybe.
All right. Well, whatever floats your boat. Whatever.
Apparently so.
Floats your boat. That's all I had, man, for foreplay. If foreplay was going to be me screaming at the team, but I didn't have anything to scream about last night. I had something to scream for, but not about. What an epic, epic win last night for the Padres. And now, that best part about baseball, well, the worst part about baseball, great, do it again. All right, cool. What have you done for me lately? Jake goes 0 for 4 today. He's back to being, you know, ripped
those
apart.
Those great wins can't come as infrequently as full solar eclipses, because the next one isn't until, I think, 2044 in the continental United States. Yep. So, Padres, we'd like you to win another one like that before 2044, please.
Yeah, I mean, look, today would be a great day to get your first. I know they won one against the Dodgers and then won one against the Giants after a week in between. I'm not going to count that as a two-game winning streak, but this would be a nice time to check that box. You already had the late-inning comeback and down 8 runs. Done.
Grand slam.
Grand slam. Check, check. Like, let's go out and win a ball game today. I'd like a laugher, if I'm being honest. I'd like a nice 9-3 victory for our San Diego Padres.
Yeah, I think today important in building off of that momentum.
No
because
question.
If you simply go out and you lose today.
What's the RD at right now, Ben?
What's the RD at?
Yeah, it's run differential.
Run differential?
Yeah, you should
plus
know that.
One.
We're at plus one.
We were at zero going into the game yesterday.
Boy, you roll a 9-3 victory today. You're a happy camper.
Well, and you get back to 500.
Yeah.
If you win today. But then there's also the phenomenon of just every dog has his day.
Yep.
There will be games like this for the A's, and the bad teams will have great days over the course of a baseball season. The trick is turning those days into a streak, into a run, which the team last year, the Padres, were never able to do it. Actually, I was looking at the highlights. The Padres posted a video, the first game at Petco Park. Ted Leitner narrated highlights from game one 20 years ago yesterday. And, you know, every dog has his day. Sean Burroughs was the big offensive star of that game. He led off, drove in 3 runs, including the walk-off single to bring home Khalil Green in a 4-3 win over the San Francisco Giants. Didn't mean that Sean Burroughs went on to a phenomenal big league career, but, you know, guys have their days, and it happens in baseball. The trick is consistency and turning those days into something more than just one comeback that is remembered as a nice, yeah, that was a fun, unexpected night for the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, don't make this the highlight of your season.
Please don't make this the highlight of your season. Make this one of many highlights over the course of a fun season.
And you know, it still will not take away from me how special it was. It was special. Last night was a special, special victory. One of 162, but really, really special.
It's good to have a highlight, though. I mean, last season, go back. I mean, what was the highlight?
The Fernando stealing home.
Yeah, probably.
That was like my highlight.
That was probably.
Garrett Sanchez's grand slam was cool. But there were no moments really to get excited
about.
For
162 games to only be able to think of
a couple
of special moments like that is unusually small for a baseball season.
Like, Ha-Sung Kim had a walk-off on April 3rd.
That was very similar to,
I mean, Fernando almost had a walk-off. You know, it felt like a walk-off kind of a moment.
Didn't David Dahl hit the one right before to tie it?
Yeah.
That's how long ago that was.
So, you know, hopefully we don't have a repeat of that where that's the highlight the first week and a half into your season.
That's a good point, Paul, because that happened very early, and you thought, oh, just like 2022, it's going to be walk-off city, and they're going to have all kinds of moments like they did the year before with Jorge Alfaro and LFGSD, and it's just picking up where they left off, and it wasn't like that.
Sanchez's grand slam didn't come until August 16th.
Yep.
Fernando stole home on August 17th. So we went a good few months in between significant moments.
You can't let that happen again this year. If you want to have any kind of a decent season, this can't be a one-off cool day and then it's forgotten about immediately.
Yeah.
It's got to be the start of something bigger going forward.
Got to. It was special. I loved it. And yeah, again, great. Now you have to do it again. What have you done for me lately? Go out there and take it to him again today.
Speaking of doing it again, this worked well last week. It ended up getting us Dewlap for our first Incorporator word. So I want to throw it out to the tier ones again. If you're in the YouTube chat and you've got a crazy Incorporator idea, or if you want to tweet us at Ben and Woods, submit them now. You've got about 20 minutes before Jesse Agler joins us for the second Incorporator of the season. We'll get his thoughts on the comeback last night and getting to call such a special game like that. All coming up with Ben and Woods. We'll be back after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
some good words coming in the chat.
I see
the,
that.
Incorporator.
I'm excited by the possibilities for the Incorporator coming up. Before the Incorporator, in the next few minutes, and someone give me an electric shock if I forget, we will give away Padres tickets for tomorrow's game against the Cubs. It is the Manny Machado bobblehead giveaway, and tickets are still available at Padres.com/tickets, but you can win a pair coming up here in just a couple of minutes from Ben and Woods and 97.3 The Fan. And it's a, 3:40 start tomorrow? It's a 7:07 start today. According to Sam Levitt on the post-game show, I heard the end of his post-game show last night. A drenched Sam Levitt from the loft at the Western Metal Supply Company building for about an hour and a half going long on the post-game show last night. I'm sure he was starting to get pretty cold by the end of the night after getting drenched by Manny and just the Tatis getting dunked by the Gatorade bath, and he took a lot of it. But 7:07 first pitch, 6:07 Eco Water SoCal pregame show. So you're feeling like it's going to be a pretty late night again tonight at Petco Park.
Ah, there it is. So good.
I'm not sure who the higher pitched.
I think it was Tatis. Both. I think both.
That
were
was
Tatis.
Both Tatis. Yeah. The yeah. Oh,
and then ah. the big one was for sure Fernando.
Yeah.
You can like. Because, I mean, Sammy's so close to that mic. It's hot.
And yeah, it's hot.
If that was Fernando talking to that mic, it would blow in your ears.
Yeah, no question.
What the hell was I just going to say? Oh, 7:07.
7:07.
On TBS. Is that right? Tonight is the TBS
game.
I thought we went through this whole rigmarole.
We talked about it, but we never actually looked it up.
Somebody
TBS game.
It is a TBS game. But not on Padres TV, or is it also?
I think it's also.
Somebody just said no on Padres TV. Oh, maybe that means no also on Padres TV. Then someone says yes. We are dialed in. Yes, it's on Padres TV. Okay, good.
So yes on Padres TV.
Yes on Padres TV. Yes on TBS.
And TBS, Padres TV, yes. Out of market only on TBS. Apparently no on TBS.
I'm going to take a nap.
Unless you're some other part of the country.
I'm going to take a nap at 5.
That's a good plan, actually, for you. And that gets you up by 7 for the game. I don't know what time you have dinner. Well, you have dinner like 3:30. So it'll be a post-dinner nap, then sleep, and then get up and watch the game at 7:07.
Margie in the chat says, Woods, why didn't Mike Schilt have Paulie sack bunt in the bottom of the 8th? No outs, Merrill on first, and Xander on deck. My guess is that bunting sucks, probably. I think that would be because bunting is terrible. And Graham Pauly's probably not much of a bunter, and he probably didn't want to give away outs with so few remaining, would be my guess. You're trying to do some damage there, driving those runs. But my general consensus is that bunting is terrible, and you shouldn't do it.
Well, they did try the other day with Kyle Higashioka,
sure did.
And he struck sure out, bunting one foul with 2 strikes.
Yeah, terrible.
It's
swing the bat.
It's definitely. Given what the metrics, given what the saber metrics say about bunting and the value that you're losing.
Yeah, that it sucks.
It's become a part of the game that teams don't focus on that much in practice anymore. Because why would you? Why would you spend a ton of time practicing something that the numbers tell you, if you actually do it, it's lessening your chance to win?
Yeah.
So they don't practice it nearly as much as they used to, which means when you actually do kind of want one, the guys aren't as good at it anymore. They just aren't. They're focusing on other parts of their game. They're trying to drive the ball, and they're not practicing a ton of bunting. They do, you'll see them try to lay one or two down, and I don't even know if I see that anymore. Do they always start batting practice with a bunt or two still, or have they kind of even abandoned that practice in the big leagues?
I don't know that I've seen it. I mean, I still practice bunting? Because I'm a terrible hitter. That's why. That's why I still practice bunting. I can bunt. They cannot. You guys don't. I will. Trust me, if we get up, if it's first and second in the 8th inning and I come up to the plate, nobody out in the Tier 1 game on Sunday, I'm laying it down.
Why?
Because I'm a terrible, unconfident hitter.
I'm pretty sure Mike Schilt will still see very rarely there's going to be some value there. You've got, the winning run at second base, nobody out. You want to get him over to third with one out.
We did that with Sugar a week ago, and we didn't get him in. You know, it just giving away outs, especially that late in the game, just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Nobody bunts in adult league. You'd be surprised, buddy. They actually do. Unconfident.
Now, bunting for a base hit is a different
story. That's a different story entirely. 100%. The third baseman playing way off the line, boom, drop it down, taking it
to the Giants crazy did
now.
That to good effect against the Padres a couple of
Matt
times.
Matt Carpenter did it to us.
Cardinals did as well.
Yep, it was.
We
beautiful.
Haven't seen a lot of Padres even attempt even bunts for base hits so far this season. Padres have plenty of speed in guys who can do it, but it doesn't seem like it's a big part of Mike Schilt's philosophy to employ the bunt. Maybe once or twice so far this season. I know Higashioka's didn't work out. That's the only one I can remember so far.
Swing it.
So that's probably why they don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, you're trying at that point. You're down a run, and you're not playing for a tie. You want to win that game. You've battled your ass back. You're trying to win that game. Grand Paulie's going up there. He's going up there trying to hit a gap there. You know what I mean? That's what he's done in his very short big league career. He's trying to do that. That's what he's done in the minor leagues. That's what he works on. He's working on trying to barrel a ball into the gap. He's going to come around and score. Let's have a big inning here. Let's try to win this baseball game, not playing for one when you're down one. So I have no problem with that. I loved it. And obviously it turned out really, really well. I'm not ever going to be a guy that's going to call for guys to bunt, ever. You know, really.
Unless I want it's for yourself.
Unless it's me. Yeah, no. The big leaguers. Me, bunting extraordinaire.
Presumably they've gotten to the big leagues because there's something about their hitting history that says they can hit, or they wouldn't be there in the first place.
I told you guys. Nothing makes me happier than that pat on the ass after just costing my team an out. Hey, attaboy, Woodsy, way to move him over.
If you're going to make an out, you might as well get some credit for it, right? When you're walking back to the dugout.
Hey, that a kid, unselfish. Good job.
All right, let's give away these Padres tickets. Call now. Let's give it to the fifth caller, 833-288-0973. Send you to the Padres-Cubs game tomorrow for the Manny Machado bobblehead giveaway. First 40,000 fans in attendance will receive a Manny Machado home run bobblehead, and you can get your tickets now at padres.com/tickets, and then the Padres are off on the road for a little while. Pros game off on Thursday, and then they go up to L.A. to face the Dodgers, and then on to Milwaukee, did we decide, is the start of next week, continuing that road trip against the Milwaukee Brewers. All right, we'll come back. Jesse Agler, the voice of the Padres and the Incorporator, will join us. Got to call a fantastic comeback last night. We'll get Jesse's thoughts on it next here on Bennett Woods, 97.3 The Fan. I just mentioned last night was a bit of a late night. Tonight will be once again. So we certainly appreciate Jesse Agler getting up. You know, got to take care of everything going on at home right now. He is standing by. The voice of the Padres, the Incorporator, will join us right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
Here's the 1-0. Fernando hits it in the air to deep left. Hap is back at the wall. Gonna go! Two-run homer, and the Padres lead it 9-8.
So I know Gwynn and Chris sometimes play Rate the Radio Call in the afternoons.
They do.
I wonder, as Jesse Agler joins us for his weekly visit, Jesse, do you ever rate your own calls? Like, do you have your own personal favorites? And do you, like, go back and decide, you know, I love that one. I could have done better on that one. What did you think of last night's Tatis go-ahead home run call?
Oh, man. You know, of course, I think about that stuff far more than I should, and very rarely in any sort of positive way. You know, I mean, it's just kind of the nature of my brain. And I mean, it's like maybe twice a year when I walk away from one going, man, I really nailed that. I mean, that just doesn't happen for me. You know, immediately, you know, my thing is like, all right, what would I have liked to have done differently that time so that I can next time, you know, get it a little bit more right in my own head. But it kind of feels like that never stops. So you're just sort of chasing the carrot, you know, and that's how I look at it. But, you know, yesterday it was, I was like, it was stunning. You kind of felt like it was maybe coming, but it was also stunning. And, you know, I wanted to give the crowd a moment there. So there was kind of that pause, you know, after it went over, and just sort of let the people who had remained at Petco Park have their moment, you know, to be sort of a part of it and cheer, and also a moment to just kind of collect myself, because it was a crazy historic thing that we just witnessed.
That was so cool. It was so cool. I texted Jesse down 4-0, and I said, man, looks like you're going to get home hello. Early. Are you there? You there? Do we lose you?
I hear him.
He said, hello.
He I know, like, we disappeared.
Hello? Are we going to get the Musgrove music? Jesse.
Boy.
Are you there?
And we lost him.
All right. We'll get him back.
Stand by.
You texted you.
Yeah.
4-0.
And I said, guy's looking to get you home early tonight. Get you home from the ballpark.
Instead, the exact opposite happened.
Yeah, a little bit longer.
I thought the emotion was 10 out of 10. Loved that call from Jesse. Yeah. Really, really fantastic. I think he's too hard on himself sometimes. Jesse's calls are usually top notch almost every single time. And the unexpectedness of it, as Jesse said, so the pitch before, remember, Fernando had gotten backed off the plate.
Yeah, thrown up and in a little bit.
And we had seen that before, but you could tell that Fernando kind of knows the MO because it happened a lot. What is usually the next pitch after he gets backed off the plate? It's going to be a slider on the outside corner to try to get him a bad swing. We got Jesse back on the line. Jesse, did you kind of notice that as well, that the home run came right after a pitch that backed Fernando Tatis Jr. off the plate? And then he knew that outside slider was coming.
Yeah, not only that, but I mean, my main takeaway from that, and Tony and I talked about it, I don't know if it was in the next inning or later that inning, was how did he not get hit by that pitch?
Yes.
You know, you talk about game of inches all the time. Cronenworth just missing the home run on, I think, the first pitch of his at-bat, and then hits one on the ninth pitch of at-bat, which, you know, that never happens, right? And then, you know, whether it's a defensive play, a little bit of a bang-bang, or the ball just gets under Talkman's glove and right. And then, you know, if Fernando gets hit by that pitch, who knows how that inning unwinds. And I think most guys do get hit by that pitch. I mean, the way he sort of, you know, moved his body and contorted himself and made himself smaller at the last second so that thing whizzed by his hip, you know, was something that not every guy is capable of. And then, of course, he hits the home run. So, I mean, it's just anytime you have a regular come from behind win, it feels like there's 1,000 things that if one would have gone the other way, you wouldn't have gotten that result. And of course, in a game like last night, that many more things like that.
Well, my dumb ass is like, wait, you got to wear that, man. We need you on base. That's my dumb. I mean, of course, I wasn't mad. I was just like, oh man, that's a good chance to get somebody on base.
Yeah, go ahead, run. Let's get you on base.
100%. Yeah. Let you.
And he almost had that home run. The first thing, put it on the top, the roof of the Western Mill. I don't know how far foul it was, but it looked like it was right by the corner there of the roof.
I texted Jesse last night after they got down 4-0, and just, I mean, like Jesse, you agree? Like bad at bats, not competitive at all. I don't know what, I think Jake Cronenworth grinding that AB out was obviously the kind of the turning point in the game, but I mean, really uncompetitive 2-0 hacks and stuff like that where you're going, okay, all right, I guess we're going to flush this one and move on. And they ended up keeping you there a little bit longer than you probably thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, look, you never anticipate coming back from 8-0. It's happened 4 times in the, you know, 50 plus year history of this franchise. So, you know, you don't expect it, but there is always in a comeback that moment where you go, all right, like let's see what happens here. And I'm telling you, when Cronenworth hit that home run, it wasn't the great at bat, although it was a great at bat, and it wasn't the home run itself, which was obviously huge, that kind of like got my brain going in that direction. It was after the home run. Yes. They had a shot of the dugout on TV, and it was very intense looking down in the dugout.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything. It was just kind of something I noticed out of the corner of my eye. And it was, I think, a shot of Cronenworth, and I forget who he was talking to, but you just saw, like, there was none of this, like, hey, we got 2, that's nice. They looked dialed in the dugout. Cronenworth in particular was all fired up. He looked to me like he had just hit a game-tying home run, not a home run that made 8-0, 8-2. And that kind of got my antenna up a little bit of like, okay, you know, maybe we're going to see something here. And again, you never anticipate coming all the way back from something like that. But there's no question that the intensity dial was turned all the way up at that point in the game. And obviously you need some things to go your way. You need to have the good at bats. You can have the plan. You can have the mentality. Then you got to go out and do the hard part, which is execute. And they certainly did. And I think I said to Tony on the air after they got the big inning, you know, they were still down, but I said, they've done the hard part. You know, like now it's easy street from here on out. Not to say it's automatic or anything like that, but you know, they had turned what felt like and looked like an insurmountable deficit into something very manageable in the late innings. And what do you know? They went out and did it.
And it was Avila too, leaning over the railing.
yeah.
of the dugout and banging on the side. Like, he was fired up, and I said, "Oh, that's different. Now you're down six, yeah. But it was cool." You're absolutely right. I know exactly what you're talking about. And Schilt said the same thing. He said guys were coming up saying, "No, we're gonna fight." Listen, it's all tropes until it's not. Like, it worked. They did it. Now you got to build off.
One of the unusual things about the comeback, though, and I could tell you noticed it, Jesse, is it. It's rare, but it happens where you get back into a game when you're down big, but it's usually a long, drawn-out process, like two or three rallies, a lot of things have to go right. It was so quick from 8-0 to feeling like they're right back in the game because it was Jake home run, and it was pitch,
bam, bam, bam,
and then
bam.
All of a sudden it's 8-5 within like 3 or 4 minutes, it seemed like, that it happened so fast, Jesse.
Yeah, it did happen fast, and the crazy thing about it is, not only did it happen fast, but it happened kind of out of nowhere because, like you said, they didn't really pose any threat to Assad at all, you know, until the Cronenworth home run. You know, they had the two hits in the second inning, runners on the corners, I think, one out. They didn't score. And then it was like nothing, 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 nothing. So it sort of lulls you to sleep a little bit, right? And it kind of is like, all right, I guess, as you said, Wazzy, I guess it's not happening tonight. And then all of a sudden you blink and it's a one run or a two run game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a remarkable thing to watch. Look, these are not things we get to see all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the Camarena game was historic for all kinds of reasons. That was 3 years ago. You might go another decade without seeing, you know, them erase an 8-0 deficit in the late innings or the mid innings. But man, it was fun. And I think also exactly what not only the team needed coming off, you know, the last two series against the Cardinals and the Giants, but probably a little bit what the fan base needed as well. Because while so many things were kind of looking like last year, this does not, you know, this didn't happen last year. Nothing close to this ever happened last year. They came close a bunch of times last year. I don't know how many times I would say going to the 8th or 9th inning, hey, the right guy's coming up, and nothing happened. You know, I stopped saying that at some point because it was like they just never got over that hump.
Yeah.
You know, so I think for all of us to see them do this early in the year, I think is really good, you know, for our sanity, if nothing else.
Jesse Agler, voice of the Padres, is with us. It's an Incorporator Tuesday. We'll get to that in just a moment. But yesterday was also the 20th anniversary of the first Padres game at Petco Park. You've been around for more than half of that. What is Jesse's favorite, maybe lesser known aspect of Petco Park? All the time that you spent there, something that you love about the ballpark?
Oh, man. I mean, how much time do we have? You know, it's
a couple minutes
look,
here.
So much
like
of it
an
is
hour
obvious.
And 14, so you're good.
Yeah. And good luck to you. It to me, you know, I got here 2014, the 10th anniversary year was my first year. And it was special. I can remember the first time I walked out onto that field, you know, there was a sense of awe. And I still get that and then some. But while they've done some really wonderful improvements, first it was the video board and obviously just sort of the general maintenance of the place to make it still feel new. I say all the time to people, I go to every ballpark. I'm very lucky around America. There are places that are not 20 years old that look way older than Petco because of the way this organization has sort of been committed to keeping it looking new and fresh and wonderful. But to me, the biggest difference between then and now are the fans. You know, and obviously because of the way the team has performed and because of the types of players they have, the atmosphere is so different now than it was then. It was always a beautiful place. We always had the weather. You know, we always had the, not always, but in the last 10 years, we've had the backdrop, you know, of all the buildings. But you didn't have the fan buy-in then that you have now. And I think the biggest difference for me in the 10 years that I've been here is the atmosphere, the noise, the engagement of the fans. And it is night and day. It really is. And these fans were ready and waiting to have a team that was sort of worthy of that sort of atmosphere. And now that they've had it, you know, they've shown up year after year at this point, and it's just turned it into what was a very wonderful building into one of the best places in baseball. And, you know, the reason that I think the ballpark keeps coming out top of all these lists isn't just because of the setting, isn't just because of how beautiful it is, because that stuff's really always been there. It's because of the atmosphere that's been created by the fans. And to me, that is what has kind of taken Petco to the next level.
It's insane. I mean, it truly, truly is insane to walk through the concourse at Petco Park right now. It's packed. I mean, Monday night's packed. Like, it's pretty cool. And if they keep, you know, they keep winning baseball games, I think they know. I said it yesterday. This city is begging to love them. Begging. That's all we want, is a winner. And we're begging to love and embrace this team.
That was wisdom, though, from Jesse. That was basically the ballpark is an unbelievable canvas, but it's the people, the team and the fans. That are the paint, the art that goes on the canvas and ultimately determines or not it's a great park or not. It doesn't have to have all the bells and whistles. If you got a great atmosphere, that's the most important thing. And Padres have created that with the help of their great fans.
And Jesse, you weren't surprised. Some people were streaming for the exits, 8-0. I thought about it. I thought about throwing in the towel. I didn't. I'm glad I stayed up the whole time. But, boy, they missed a good one if they did leave. And let that be a lesson to them, I guess.
I mean, you know, we're taking the For the Faithful thing pretty literally last night, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, that's who was left, you know, in the eighth inning. And when Fernando hits that home run, the faithful were the ones who were left. And that is, even with a clock in baseball now, there's still no clock. You know, you get your 27 outs, you go until you can't go anymore. You know, time, they can't run out the clock on you. You know, you can't run out of time in baseball, even with a pitch clock. You still get your 27 outs. And if you're able to use all of them in that way, you create, you know, a lifetime memory, and that's what they did last night.
All right, Benny, lay it on him.
All right, time for the Incorporator. If you've just joined us, Jesse, every Tuesday we'll have to incorporate a strange vocabulary word into the baseball broadcast, one that does not belong. And today's word is contributed by Tier 1 Anthony the Butcher. Just celebrated a birthday, so we thought, choose his word that he submitted. It's a very simple definition. Today's word is biblioclept. Someone who steals.
Nice. Like a book stealer?
I was going to make him.
The etymology, I'm sure Jesse could have figured that out. But
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Someone who steals books.
Biblioclept.
What a great word.
Yeah. I was a biblioclept a little bit.
Were you?
Yeah, when I was a kid. Like
just not returning
library books. I really wanted. I read. It's called "No One Here Gets Out Alive," and it's a biography about Jim Morrison. And I loved it so much. Instead of just buying it, I was like 14. I stole it.
Wow.
I ripped
when teenage rebels are also English majors.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what
I ripped the little barcode. Ripped the barcode out of the paperback and was like, "Well, that was the easiest thing I've ever swiped." And that's what I did. I was an actual biblioclept.
You were trying to break on through to the other side.
I was. It was, I tried that many, many years, Jesse, breaking on through. I never actually got through, to be honest, but it wasn't for a lack of trying.
We had the discussion. I just mentioned last night was a bit of a late night. Tonight will be once again. So we certainly appreciate Jesse Agler getting up. You know, he's got to take care of everything going on at home right now. He is standing by. The voice of the Padres, the Incorporator, will join us right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
Here's the 1-0. Fernando hits it in the air to deep left. Hap is back at the wall. Gonna go! Two-run homer! And the Padres lead it! 9-8.
So I know Gwynn and Chris sometimes play Rate the Radio Call in the afternoons.
They do.
I wonder, as Jesse Agler joins us for his weekly visit, Jesse, do you ever rate your own calls? Like, do you have your own personal favorites? And do you, like, go back and decide, you know, I love that one. I could have done better on that one. What did you think of last night's Tatis go-ahead home run call?
Oh, man. You know, of course, I think about that stuff far more than I should, and very rarely in any sort of positive way. I mean, it's just kind of the nature of my brain. And I mean, it's like maybe twice a year when I walk away from one going, man, I really nailed that. I mean, that just doesn't happen for me. You know, immediately, you know, my thing is like, all right, what would I have liked to have done differently that time so that I can next time, you know, get it a little bit more right in my own head. But it kind of feels like that never stops. So you're just sort of chasing the carrot, you know, and that's how I look at it. But, you know, yesterday it was, I was like, It was stunning. You kind of felt like it was maybe coming, but it was also stunning. And, you know, I wanted to give the crowd a moment there. So there was kind of that pause, you know, after it went over and just sort of let the people who had remained at Petco Park have their moment, you know, to be sort of a part of it and cheer, and also a moment to just kind of collect myself because it was a crazy historic thing that we just witnessed.
That was so cool. It was so cool. I texted Jesse down 4-0, and I said, man, looks like you're going to get home early. Are you there? You there? Do we lose you?
I hear him.
He says hello. Hear us?
I know, like, he disappeared.
Hello? Are we going to get the Musgrove music? Jesse.
Boy.
Are you there?
And we lost him.
All right.
We'll get him back.
Stand by.
You texted you.
Yeah.
4-0.
And I said, guy's looking to get you home early tonight. Get you home from the ballpark.
Instead, the exact opposite happened.
Yeah, a little bit longer.
I thought the emotion was 10 out of 10. Loved that call from Jesse. Yeah. Really, really fantastic. I think he's too hard on himself sometimes. Jesse's calls are usually top-notch almost every single time. And the unexpectedness of it, as Jesse said, so the pitch before, remember, Fernando had gotten backed off the plate.
Yeah, thrown up and in a little bit.
And we had seen that before, but you could tell that Fernando kind of knows the MO because it happened a lot. What is usually the next pitch after he gets backed off the plate? It's going to be a slider on the outside corner to try to get him a bad swing. We got Jesse back on the line. Jesse, did you kind of notice that as well, that the home run came right after a pitch that backed Fernando Tatis Jr. off the plate? And then he knew that outside slider was coming.
Yeah, not only that, but I mean, my main takeaway from that, and Tony and I talked about it, I don't know if it was in the next inning or later that inning, was how did he not get hit by that pitch?
Yes.
You know, you talk about game of inches all the time. Cronenworth just missing the home run on, I think, the first pitch of his at-bat, and then hits one on the ninth pitch of at-bat, which, you know, that never happens, right? And then, you know, whether it's a defensive play, a little bit of a bang-bang, or the ball just gets under Talkman's glove and right. And then, you know, if Fernando gets hit by that pitch, who knows how that inning unwinds. And I think most guys do get hit by that pitch. I mean, the way he sort of, you know, moved his body and contorted himself and made himself smaller at the last second so that thing whizzed by his hip, you know, was something that not every guy is capable of. And then, of course, he hits the home run. So, I mean, it's just anytime you have a regular come from behind win, it feels like there's 1,000 things that if one would have gone the other way, you wouldn't have gotten that result. And of course, in a game like last night, that many more things like that.
Oh, my dumb ass is like, wait, you got to wear that, man. We need you on base. That's my dumb. I mean, of course, I wasn't mad. I was just like, oh man, that's a good chance to get somebody on base.
Yeah, go ahead, run. Let's get you on base.
100%. Yeah. Let you.
And he almost had that home run. The first thing, he put it on the top of the roof of the Western Mill. I don't know how far foul it was, but it looked like it was right by the corner there of the roof.
I texted Jesse last night after they got down 4-0, and just, I mean, like, Jesse, you agree? Like, bad at bats, not competitive at all. I don't know what, I think Jake Cronenworth grinding that AB out was obviously the kind of the turning point in the game, but I mean, really uncompetitive 2-0 hacks and stuff like that where you're going, okay, all right, I guess we're going to flush this one and move on. And they ended up keeping you there a little bit longer than you probably thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, look, you never anticipate coming back from 8-0. It's happened 4 times in the, you know, 50 plus year history of this franchise. So, you know, you don't expect it, but there is always in a comeback that moment where you go, all right, like, let's see what happens here. And I'm telling you, when Cronenworth hit that home run, it wasn't the great at bat, although it was a great at bat, and it wasn't the home run itself, which was obviously huge, that kind of like got my brain going in that direction. It was after the home run. Yes. They had a shot of the dugout on TV, and it was very intense looking down in the dugout.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything. It was just kind of something I noticed out of the corner of my eye. And it was, I think, a shot of Cronenworth, and I forget who he was talking to, but you just saw, like, there was none of this, like, hey, we got 2, that's nice. They looked dialed in the dugout. Cronenworth in particular was all fired up. He looked to me like he had just hit a game-tying home run, not a home run that made 8-0, 8-2. And that kind of got my antenna up a little bit of like, okay, maybe we're going to see something here. And again, you never anticipate coming all the way back from something like that. But there's no question that the intensity dial was turned all the way up at that point in the game. And obviously you need some things to go your way. You need to have the good at bats. You can have the plan. You can have the mentality. Then you got to go out and do the hard part, which is execute. And they certainly did. And I think I said to Tony on the air after they got the big inning, you know, they were still down, but I said, they've done the hard part. You know, like now it's easy street from here on out. Not to say it's automatic or anything like that, but you know, they had turned what felt like and looked like an insurmountable deficit into something very manageable in the late innings. And what do you know? They went out and did it.
And it was Avila, too, leaning over the railing of the the dugout and banging on the side. Like, he was fired up. And I said, oh, that's different. Now you're down six.
Yeah.
But it was cool. You're absolutely right. I know exactly what you're talking about. And Schilt said the same thing. He said guys were coming up saying, no, we're going to fight. Listen, it's all tropes until it's not. Like, it worked. They did it. Now you got to build off.
Well, one of the unusual things about the comeback, though, and I could tell you noticed it, Jesse, is it's rare, but it happens where you get back into a game when you're down big, but it's usually a long, drawn-out process, like two or three rallies, a lot of things have to go right. It was so quick from 8-0 to feeling like they're right back in the game because it was Jake home run, and it was pitch,
bam, bam, bam,
and then
bam.
All of a sudden it's 8-5 within like 3 or 4 minutes, it seemed like, that it happened so fast, Jesse.
Yeah, it did happen fast, and the crazy thing about it is, not only did it happen fast, but it happened kind of out of nowhere because, like you said, they didn't really pose any threat to Assad at all, you know, until the Cronenworth home run. You know, they had the two hits in the second inning, runners on the corners, I think, one out. They didn't score. And then it was like nothing, 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 nothing. So it sort of lulls you to sleep a little bit, right? And it kind of is like, all right, I guess, as you said, Wazee, I guess it's not happening tonight. And then all of a sudden you blink and it's a one run or a two run game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a remarkable thing to watch. Look, these are not things we get to see all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the Camarena game was historic for all kinds of reasons. That was 3 years ago. You might go another decade without seeing them erase an 8-0 deficit in the late innings or the mid innings. But man, it was fun. And I think also exactly what not only the team needed coming off, you know, the last two series against the Cardinals and the Giants, but probably a little bit what the fan base needed as well. Because while so many things were kind of looking like last year, this does not, you know, this didn't happen last year. Nothing close to this ever happened last year. They came close a bunch of times last year. I don't know how many times I would say going to the 8th or 9th inning, hey, the right guy's coming up, and nothing happened. You know, I stopped saying that at some point because it was like they just never got over that hump.
Yeah.
You know, so I think for all of us to see them do this early in the year, I think is really good, you know, for our sanity, if nothing else.
Jesse Agler, voice of the Padres, is with us. It's an Incorporator Tuesday. We'll get to that in just a moment. But yesterday was also the 20th anniversary of the first Padres game at Petco Park. You've been around for more than half of that. What is Jesse's favorite, maybe lesser known aspect of Petco Park? All the time that you spent there, something that you love about the ballpark?
Oh man! I mean, how much time do we have? You know, it's
a couple minutes
look,
here.
So much
like
of it
an
is
hour
obvious.
And 14. So you're good.
Yeah. And good luck to you. It to me, you know, I got here 2014. The 10th anniversary year was my first year, and it was special. I can remember the first time I walked out onto that field. You know, there was a sense of awe, and I still get that, and then some. But while they've done some really wonderful improvements, first it was the video board and obviously just sort of the general maintenance of the place to make it still feel new. I say all the time to people, I go to every ballpark. I'm very lucky around America. There are places that are not 20 years old that look way older than Petco because of the way this organization has sort of been committed to keeping it looking new and fresh and wonderful. But to me, the biggest difference between then and now are the fans. You know, and obviously because of the way the team has performed and because of the types of players they have, the atmosphere is so different now than it was then. It was always a beautiful place. We always had the weather. You know, we always had the, not always, but in the last 10 years, we've had the backdrop, you know, of all the buildings. But you didn't have the fan buy-in then that you have now. And I think the biggest difference for me in the 10 years that I've been here is the atmosphere, the noise, the engagement of the fans. And it is night and day. It really is. And these fans were ready and waiting to have a team that was sort of worthy of that sort of atmosphere. And now that they've had it, you know, they've shown up year after year at this point, and it's just turned it into what was a very wonderful building into one of the best places in baseball. And, you know, the reason that I think the ballpark keeps coming out top of all these lists isn't just because of the setting, isn't just because of how beautiful it is, because that stuff's really always been there. It's because the atmosphere that's been created by the fans, and to me, that is what has kind of taken Petco to the next level.
It's insane. I mean, it truly, truly is insane to walk through the concourse at Petco Park right now. It's packed. I mean, Monday night's packed. Like, it's pretty cool. And if they keep, you know, they keep winning baseball games, I think they know. I said it yesterday. This city is begging to love them. Begging. That's all we want is a winner. And we're begging to love and embrace this team.
That was wisdom, though, from Jesse. That was basically the ballpark is an unbelievable canvas, but it's the people, the team and the fans. That are the paint, the art that goes on the canvas and ultimately determines or not it's a great park or not. It doesn't have to have all the bells and whistles. If you got a great atmosphere, that's the most important thing. And Padres have created that with the help of their great fans.
And Jesse, you weren't surprised. Some people were streaming for the exits, 8-0. I thought about it. I thought about throwing in the towel. I didn't. I'm glad I stayed up the whole time. But, boy, they missed a good one if they did leave. And let that be a lesson to them, I guess.
I mean, you know, we're taking the For the Faithful thing pretty literally last night, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, that's who was left, you know, in the eighth inning. And when Fernando hits that home run, the faithful were the ones who were left. And that is, even with a clock in baseball now, there's still no clock. You know, you get your 27 outs. You go until you can't go anymore. You know, time, they can't run out the clock on you. You know, you can't run out of time in baseball, even with a pitch clock. You still get your 27 outs. And if you're able to use all of them, in that way, you create, you know, a lifetime memory, and that's what they did last night.
All right, Benny, lay it on him.
All right, time for the incorporator. If you've just joined us, Jesse, every Tuesday we'll have to incorporate a strange vocabulary word into the baseball broadcast, one that does not belong. And today's word is contributed by Tier 1 Anthony the Butcher. Just celebrated a birthday, so we thought, choose his word that he submitted. It's a very simple definition. Today's word is biblioclept. Someone who steals.
Nice. Like a book stealer?
I was going to make him.
The etymology, I'm sure Jesse could have figured that out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Someone who steals books.
Biblioclept.
What a great word.
Yeah. I was a biblioclept a little bit.
Were you?
Yeah, when I was a kid. Like,
just not returning
library books. I really wanted, I read, it's called No One Here Gets Out Alive, and it's a biography about Jim Morrison. And I loved it so much, instead of just buying it, I stole it. I ripped
Teenage rebels are also English majors.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what.
I ripped the little barcode. Ripped the barcode out of the paperback and was like, well, that was the easiest thing I've ever swiped. And that's what I did. I was an actual biblioclept.
You were trying to break on through to the other side.
I was. It was, I tried that many, many years, Jesse, breaking on through. I never actually got through, to be honest, but it wasn't for a lack of trying.
We had the discussion last Wednesday about the different methods that Jesse uses to incorporate the word.
Yes.
Which is fascinating. The directed conversation,
yep.
the crime of opportunity, essentially, when he just kind of jumps in on, something that Tony is saying, or the conversation goes in a direction, or the true incorporator when it actually fits the situation, which is very rare. I don't know how biblioclept will ever fit the situation tonight.
They'll make it work.
Who knows? Jesse will find a way to make it work and get that word into the broadcast. I have no doubt.
We will do our best. Happy birthday to Anthony. That's a great word. And tune in to find out.
We will, man. Thank you so much. And get some rest. Going to be another long one tonight. Hopefully another dub.
Sounds good to me.
Jesse Agler, the voice of the Padres and our incorporator. You can tune in tonight, 7:07 First Pitch, Eco Water SoCal pregame show with Sam Levitt at 6:07. It is Joe Musgrove on the mound for the Padres, and the Cubs are going again. What was his name? Brown? He's basically
Ben Brown,
spot starter. Yeah. Don't think he's stretched out enough to go. 11.12 ERA, nearly 2 WHIP.
I'm going to choose to believe. I'm not going to say what I want to say. I'm going to choose to believe. That's what I'm going to do right now.
But most of that is one bad outing. He gave up 6 runs in an inning and 2/3 against the Rangers in his first appearance. He actually threw 4 innings, 3 hits, 1 run against the Rockies his last time out. So he's coming off a better performance. Speaking of pitching performances, did anyone see Blake Snell?
I did.
Made his San Francisco Giants debut last night against the Washington Nationals. It was very Snell-like.
Snellian in in nature. And what was his final
three
line?
Three innings, okay. Three hits, three runs, two walks, five strikeouts, 72 pitches.
Yeah.
And he wasn't fully stretched out either, so Bob Melvin pulled him at that point. Now,
Giants lose?
Yeah, they lost 8-1 to the Washington Nationals. And
the Nationals? Oof.
Yeah, and it wasn't a great game. I mean, I saw like one of the runs scored on like a pickoff, and then the runner at third came home, and the throw was late. I mean, is that, you know, Blake's putting the traffic on, and, you know, he's responsible for that. But remember, all those walks that didn't come around to burn him last year, no guarantee that that will happen the same way for him this season.
Tim Kawakami, who writes about the Bay Area sports scene, tweeted something last night, and he says, was that a 40-pitch inning for Snell? Something around there, excruciating to watch a veteran pitcher just not be able to throw strikes. And Padre fans, I didn't even think they were being mean to him. They just said, hey, man, that's the full Blake Snell experience. And
we didn't know when he came over from the Rays either.
He started raging on people and blocking them like crazy.
Oh, he's such a blocker.
I was like, holy cow.
He's blocked
cow.
Me before.
So he did?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, what?
I don't remember why he unblocked me at some point, but he is the... He is the most liberal blocker on Twitter.
So Ryan tweets him, has this guy never watched Blake Snell before?
He's probably blocked.
He tweets this back, the Padre fan rage. I noted that Snell was having a tough time last night. I have watched him do this often before he came a Giant. The Ragers want me not to note it when it happens as a Giant. I'm confused. You're just enraged. Holy smokes, bro.
That's Tim. He's not a bad guy.
No,
his social media is definitely gets a little chippy at times.
How do you tweet that I'm amazed that a veteran could throw 40 pitches in an inning? It's like, bro, this is standard. Like, you better, you know, what do they have him for, a year?
2 years?
Yeah.
Well, at least one, and
better,
maybe more.
You
up
better
to three.
Dive in, pal. This is what you get for
especially
a while.
In April.
Especially in April that he hadn't had the spring training.
Yeah.
Man, Tim.
I'll tell you one person who wasn't surprised at all by Blake Snell's performance yesterday. Bob Melvin.
Yeah, 100%.
Not at all surprised, I'm sure. We'll talk about that more. We'll get to the Rondle Report, final hour of Ben and Woods, coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan.